host of the Prudent Money Radio Show, heard daily on Bible School Radio 91.3 KDKR Decatur, Dallas, Fort Worth, and on 91.3 KYJC Commerce.
Portions of KDKR programming do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or staff.
Prudent Money with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.
Well, is President Biden forgiving even more student loan debt? Today we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, the Biden administration said it would forgive $1.2 billion in student debt for nearly 153,000 borrowers enrolled in its new repayment program called the Saving on a Valuable Education or SAVE Plan. The relief will go to borrowers who have been in repayment for a decade or longer and originally took out $12,000 or less. Here to give us his thought on it is John Napolo. John, always good to talk to you. I think before we talk about this plan, maybe give us a little bit of an update on the FAFSA fiasco.
Hey, Bob, nice to be with you, and sorry that we have to continue talking about the ongoing FAFSA fiasco, which, frankly, just seems to get worse and worse as time goes on. So the very quick update is that on the entire situation for families trying to understand what their eligibility for federal financial aid is still up in the air and a mess. And, Bob, you'll appreciate this as one who at one point had to actually plunk down a down payment on May 1st. The colleges are expecting you to say on about May 1st, national deadline day, that, yeah, we want to come to your school. We're really excited about this, and here's the down payment. Well, this year, and what are we now, 8 or so weeks away from May 1st, families still have no idea how much federal aid their student is actually eligible for. It is a fiasco, debacle, disaster, whatever you want to call it. And it's not, frankly, getting any better. So where we stand exactly is that in the next week or two or three, the United States Department of Education said they will deliver to the schools the first round or the next round or a round of information about how much these students will be eligible for. So then the students can get their financial aid award letters with a firm commitment from the government saying, we're going to give you a Pell Grant of this amount, some other aid of that amount, a work-study award, whatever it might be. So it's all up in the air. And not to get too far into this very sad saga, but literally, Bob, literally last week, the Department of Education announced that there was one more change that needed to be made to the formula. And so they went and said, we've got to make this change, so hold everything. And then two days later, the Congress passed a bill to reverse the Department of Education's claim that they need to fix this new formula.
Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable. Let me ask you a couple of questions, John. First of all, between the last time we spoke and today, have things got worse? Is it, if that's even possible? And second, is this as bad as you could have ever imagined it getting, or could you even see it getting a little bit worse?
Bob, I'm a pretty good pessimist when it comes to thinking about how the government is not going to implement very well, and I think they're just going to mess it up. And so I thought, okay, sort of half-heartedly joked about this in the fall when we were saying they're going to make the FAFSA available sometime in December. And then when December was approaching, they said, well, we're going to do it by the end of December. And then at the end of December, they said, well, we're going to do a soft launch, which means we're going to have it out there. And then it turned out the form was almost unavailable to everybody except for like 2 hours on certain days. And it just continued to snowball. And the reason I say that I couldn't have imagined this is, would you really think that any government agency that had 3+ years to get this right would be in a situation where literally 10 weeks before they're supposed to give the parents need to give a down payment, the Department of Education is saying, we still don't know what the formula is supposed to be. So from that perspective, I don't think it could have gotten any worse. Again, as one who understands, because I have a company that makes software, and you know that there are going to be errors and bugs, and it's going to take a little while to get the software right. But my biggest beef with the U.S. Department of Education is that they had to have known sometime in the summer last year or early in 2023 that they were not going to make this deadline. And they should have come clean, and they should have told parents, this is going to be the problem. And instead, they tried to like leak out all this good news about it's going to be sometime in December. And now here we are, the beginning part of March, and they still don't have it right. And they're still not telling people what's actually going to happen. So it's sad. It's shameful. It's terrible. And I can't wait for this bad dream to be over for all these poor parents and students who want to understand, how much money is the government going to give me next year so I can go to school?
Yeah, it's quite unbelievable. This, if you had, because you've watched this very closely, excuse me, since last year, if you had to point to a reason for this being in such a mess, did they bite off more than they could chew? Did they not allow for enough time? Incompetence? No leadership? What do you think how could something like this really take place?
I think you listed four or five, so I'm going to say F or G, all of the above. I think it's a little bit of everything, and there'll be congressional inquiries that will tell us what the answer is. But you know, don't forget, Bob, this was supposed to have been implemented a year ago, and then and about 2 years ago, the Department of Education said, we're not going to be able to make this deadline. There's too much to do. We need another year. So I said, okay, great. You need another year. Take this extra year, get it right, and you see. And yes, what you're saying is absolutely right. I'm sure that they underestimated how difficult it was going to be to do this IRS linking, making sure that all those security protocols are right. I'll bet any money that the IRS software doesn't talk real well to any software at the Department of Education, so they had to do all that, and you know, probably 16 other things that I have no information about. But my instinct is that, yes, when they finally got down to the drawing board and figured out line by line of code what needed to be done, they probably realized they were out of time, which again is my point of they had to have known this a lot sooner than September 2023 that they were going to have a problem. So it's all water under the bridge. And for families that are living through this, you know, this teeth gnashing doesn't help them. And that's really what I think the problem is, that we can't find a way to provide good, solid information to families. The early on, I would say, file your FAFSA as early as you can. And they couldn't. The blogs and the Facebook groups and the Reddit groups and all the rest of them are filled with people with really legitimate questions, asking great questions, and there are no answers, basically. It's really quite unbelievable.
And you do have some resources at your site that can help college students. Can you talk a little bit about that?
We do. At mycollegecorner.com, we have something called, in the tools section, called the Financial Aid Calculator. It's a student aid index calculator. And by the way, it is updated with the changes that the federal government announced that they haven't yet made on their own site. So our calculator is recent. And the reason I know the detail, Bob, of what happened last week is that we figured out a way to fix our formula, and we were going to announce the launch of it on Friday. And on Friday is when the Congress passed the bill saying that they reversed it. So we try to be on top of this. But that calculator, the student aid index calculator, the financial aid calculator at mycollegecorner.com will give the best, most accurate estimate of the student aid index that's available. So I hope folks will use it. And by the way, Bob, almost 200,000 people have used that calculator since September 1st. We're getting really great utilization. We're really proud of the fact that we've been able to keep it up. And, you know, we hope it helps families that we know are in a jam.
And that's all at mycollegecorner.com. Let's talk a little bit about the SAVE plan. We talked about this, I don't know, a couple times ago. And, you know, it's just like he's chipping away at the numbers. And but at the same kind of, which is odd, at the same time, he's not getting any place. because if you look at this plan, it only applies to people who originally took out $12,000 or less. And you just got to love the U.S. Secretary of Education statement. He says, with today's announcement, we are once again sending a clear message to borrowers who had low balances. If you've been paying for a decade, you've done your part and you deserve relief. Well, they started out at $12,000 10 years ago. I mean, of course, they're going to be low balances. But what do you make of this? Because it just doesn't seem like any... I mean, I think... You know, great that he's making efforts to get rid of student loan debt, but it doesn't seem like it's like all flash and no substance.
Oh, I agree. The sound bites are way out in front of the execution on a lot of this. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Bob. You know, this all stems, we remember that the Supreme Court ruled against the big $400 billion debt relief bill that the president wanted. And soon after that, he said, well, I'm going to get at it a different way. And so with this most recent announcement, he'll have about $138 billion of total debt relief. And your point's exactly the right one. Look at the fine print. And the fine print is you had to start with a balance of $12,000 or less. The average student loan debt in the country is about $37,000 or $38,000. So there weren't a whole lot of borrowers proportionally that had $12,000 or less to begin with. And by the way, Bob, if you had a $12,000 loan and you paid it over 10 years, the odds are you're going to be pretty close to paying that off if you haven't paid it off in 10 years anyway. So I think this is one of those things, and it is, look, another $1.2 billion. Of debt relief for a good group of borrowers, but the other side of the coin, and this is what I've had trouble with. On one level, I agree that debt forgiveness for students who got a bad deal, their school closed, they went to a fraudulent school, something happened where, you know, actually through no fault of their own, they got stuck with some debt. Maybe there's a good group of those folks, and the president got it at a bunch of that. I think it's like $50 billion or so in that kind of debt relief. So, okay, you know, that to me sounds like it's fair. The other side of the coin is, what about all those people who paid on time? There's an article in the paper just a day or so ago where somebody stepped up and said, yeah, well, you know, we sold my wife's car so we could pay off her loan. Right, and now they're giving all this debt forgiveness. Should I rather that she had the car? Why did I sell the car? And the other point that was made is that there are a whole bunch of people in this country that are hardworking. They're paying taxes. They didn't go to college, and they're subsidizing the relief for those students who did go to college. You know, and so there's this question, and for me, that's always been an underlying question of fairness. If I paid off my loan yesterday, and you're going to forgive somebody else's loan tomorrow, or I have to take another loan, how does that really work out? And at the end of the day, the president made a campaign promise. He had the progressive wing of the Democratic Party with Chuck Schumer and Senator Warren and Senator Sanders and all those folks clamoring during those conventions and during the political elections of the last almost 10 years now, talking about this being a huge issue and we've got to do something. And so this is the way the president has gotten through his executive authority to get some debt relief. And the last of this, maybe we'll hear some more tomorrow night on Thursday with the State of the Union, where they're whispering now that, to get to your point, that they've done all this, but they're not getting credit for it. And so how do they, from a political angle, say that they made do and actually fulfilled a pretty important campaign promise? So, again, unfortunately, this has become a huge political football. Both sides of the aisle are going to kick it from one place to the other. And just like with the FAFSA fiasco, it's real people with real loans who are living with the consequences of the sound bites and the political football going from the left to the right. So it's really, I think in a lot of ways, it's sad, again. But it is the reality, and I give people a lot of credit for trying to do the best and understand these programs and take advantage of them as best they can.
You know, it just amazes me how in most of these cases that they they roll out these programs, it's not too obvious. I mean, if you look and you can see, you can tell it's just a bunch of headline numbers that don't mean anything. I mean, these programs are really obvious. You know what I mean? Talking about the low balances and you know, maybe forgiving $1,000 or $2,000. And, you know, you talk about from a political standpoint, that's what I guess I don't understand, is that if you add up all the numbers, I would guess it would be pretty impressive as far as how many people have been affected by a student loan forgiveness program. But yet, I don't think they're getting any credit for it because they're not talking about it.
And I think part of that, and I agree, the other side of that coin is they have so much other bad stuff going on around the federal financial aid programs. It almost becomes a diversion. When I see these announcements, I think they want me to read this because they don't want to talk about the FAFSA fiasco, and they don't want to talk about all the other unrest on the campuses or on all kinds of issues that are going on there. So I think maybe politically, and again, I'm not a campaign manager, so I don't know, but I'm guessing that, you know, I don't know if I want to talk a lot about student loan forgiveness because it's going to rile up the people who didn't have loans that were forgiven. It's going to rile up the people who think more of their loans should have been forgiven. And it's going to rile up the other side to give me something that they can poke at me with, right? So it's like, well, wait a minute, you want to go forgive loans, but what about my friend whose wife sold her car to pay off that student loan? Was that fair to her? And so this might be one of those situations where it's calculated at the highest level to be a lose, 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 and maybe there's some better issues to try to get some votes around.
You know, it makes me wonder if you sat down, and I jotted down some ideas and would like to get ideas from you as well. It seems like that they could take this program and revamp it. To me, of course, and no big surprise, it seems like they're going down the wrong road to gain a solution. But do you think that there could come a day where they could really take this and make it fair? I hate to use the word fair, but make it to be an opportunity for everybody in some kind of a way, and make it beneficial? Or is it just kind of a failed program to begin with?
No, I think that it's a noble program to begin with. Helping kids get an education is what this country's about, right? And education, by the way, doesn't mean necessarily going to college. It means getting something that you need to be successful in, something you're passionate about, right? Apprenticeship programs, the trades, whatever it might be, but something to take that high school graduate and get them excited about doing something with the next part of their life. And when you go like right back to the beginning, the Higher Education Act of 1965, right? 1965 is when a lot of this got started. And at that time, Bob, from 1965 into the early 90s, the Higher Education Act was required to be reauthorized on a schedule. And if I remember correctly, it was like every 7 years. And then all of a sudden, in the late 80s, early 90s, they started kicking the can down the road. And they said, oh, we can't agree on a 7-year reauthorization. So there's this little piece, like the student loan interest rates are not good, so we're just going to fix those. And they came up with a solution for that little problem. And then a few years later, another problem would come up. So it got away from this idea that we're trying to actually educate kids to, we have a problem. The student loan interest rates are too high, they're too low, whatever they are. There's another problem with repayment. There's another. And that's how we got to the situation where 2 years ago we had 9 student loan repayment options. The president's now putting us at least to 1, the SAVE program that they're trying to push everybody to. And so I think that your point's exactly the right one. Maybe this is a galvanizing time where the FAFSA fiasco and all the rest of the issues that we're having around the aid delivery program, the student loan forgiveness programs, all the rest of it, let's start over. Let's have the Higher Education Act of 2025 and make it modern, use the technology, and actually find a way to let kids who need money, free money, they don't have a lot of income and assets, they're at the underprivileged, underserved communities, let them get more grants. Let's look at the loan programs for kids who really need it, middle-class kids who really need those programs, low interest, good repayment terms, not overbearing, And your point's it. Let's start over. But it takes political will to do that, and we haven't seen anything more than political sound bites. And I hope the will soon replace the sound bites so we can actually fix what has just become a gigantic mess.
You know, I think the question is, and we've never talked about this, which kind of surprises me, what kind of relationship do politicians have with these colleges? Is this a matter of playing politics? And if it is, how are politics getting in the way? Well, what have you, because I know you've been greatly involved in a lot of political organizations and everything with this situation. I mean, how deeply interwoven is the political landscape?
Yeah, that is a great question because we haven't talked about it, and you don't hear many people talking about it. And I think part of the reason for that, it's another one of those areas that has really changed very fundamentally. And we see it now playing out with freedom of speech on the college campuses. We saw what happened to the presidents at the University of Pennsylvania, at Harvard, MIT, when they went and they testified and became very highly politicized. And whatever the issues are, and you may agree or disagree, and I'm not making a given opinion on one or the other, but the point is politics has come to play in all of this. And I think it breaks either way. And I'll give you a primary example of this. The PLUS loan program that you and I have talked about, which I don't like for a lot of reasons, not the least of which it's a high interest rate, and they'll give the loan basically to anybody who has any – they can't have adverse credit, which means almost nothing in the credit world. It's hard to have adverse credit. So they're going to give basically as much money as somebody wants to borrow at a high interest rate. And who are the people who take this loan the most proportionately? It's unfortunately African-Americans, Latinos, and other groups, disadvantaged groups generally. Again, generalization. And who is the largest proponent of not trying to fix that program? It's some of the schools that serve those populations, like the historically black colleges and universities. Great schools, absolutely terrific schools doing really great work. But when you look at trying to fix a program like the PLUS loan program, if you go back and just do a little bit of Google searching, who was opposed to actually trying to put credit parameters into that program? It became a political football. Mm. And again, not to get too far down the path there, but for me, that's a really difficult topic to talk about. But what is the proper connection between the economics and the communities that are using these different kind of products, meaning loan products? As I talk as a banker now, I talk about products, but loans. What is the right opportunity? And maybe it should be that students and who are served by some of these programs, for instance, like some of the PLUS loan program, those kids would be a lot better off with grants, right? That's kind of the point. But that's a very difficult conversation because I probably just touched like five landmines, right? And, right. I hope nobody starts, railing against me in the any of these Facebook groups or anyway for saying this. But it's factually accurate what I said about, who was opposed to trying to fix the PLUS loan program. That's a perfect example.
Well, John, listen, appreciate so much you and your work. MyCollegeCorner.com is where you can get more information and check out some great resources. John, always good talking to you. We'll talk to you next month.
Very well, Bob. God bless you. Be well.
God bless you. This is Bob Brooks. If you got a question for me, please go to the website at PrudentMoney.com and send it in because we are all out of time. Until we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.